Karen, you know, had a beef with some of the board members, but she also had a beef with some of the board members for other things, because Karen was challenged, for example, by Becky Johnson, who's a board member, not in her capacity on the board, but Karen backed this homeless community resource, this spare change, not real change, hoax, as I call it, this kind of merchant-funded throw paper at the homeless, let them eat paper downtown, which encouraged people not to give away money to homeless people, and instead give them a little yellow slip of paper that says, you know, call this program, call that program, spend your money on the phones, and then get there and find out there aren't any services anyway, because, as I've said repeatedly, there are less than 30 spaces for homeless people to sleep during the most of the fall, summer, and spring in Santa Cruz, and there are more than 500 to 1,500 homeless people. Anyway, Becky Johnson wrote an editorial in the paper about a year or two ago saying that this program stunk, and Karen Gillette didn't like her position, because Karen's pretty close to the merchants who are doing this program, and I think they had a private exchange of letters about it, but, you know, it was, so what? It wasn't about the CCH, but Karen takes a lot of this stuff very personally, and she didn't like what Becky did, apparently. Becky was a board member, and Becky also protested Karen's closed meetings. In fact, this was a more public issue. I guess she and other board members made it a condition of merger that there be open meetings of the board, the new board, the merged board, that Karen Gillette would be the main head of. And I guess this was accepted. I don't know whether Karen specifically objected to this or not. But she announced she was, even after both boards announced they were going to appoint her and it was fine, she announced she was resigning. And the minute I heard this, frankly, I thought, this is not a real resignation. She's engaging in what we call a power play. She wants to terrorize homeless clients who like her, and city council members who rely on her, and merchants who, you know, also use her for controlling homeless people and also trust her, and frighten them into giving her more power. And indeed, she got more power. So when her resignation was rescinded on Friday, we learn that they're going to cut the board down to size, and they're going to give essentially her board veto power over the other board's composition. So in other words, Homeless Community Resource Center will be able to veto people on the other board. It's also true the other board will be able to veto Homeless Community Resource Center people, but that's not relevant because there are no homeless people on the Homeless Community Resource Center board, really. There is one guy, Brian Koepke, who's come back to town. I wonder whether he was flown back to town by the merchants and Karen Gillette. I'm not sure. That's not fair. He may have hitchhiked back. But there hasn't been any homeless person on their board, whereas the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is incrementally better. They've actually had a formerly homeless woman on the board for some time who's been quite critical of Karen Gillette, outspokenly critical. And I think that kind of criticism is, you know, appropriate. I don't think it's necessarily, you don't have to believe it, but the fact that that criticism is allowed to exist is an important thing. Homeless people need to know they can criticize the people at the top without getting evicted from the services or shut down or threatened. And indeed, some of the criticisms about the Citizens Committee for the Homeless that I've heard has been that monitors of the ISSP program have threatened people in the program for simply pointing out abuses, like drug use by monitors, for instance, which, again, as I said, I think the whole drug issue is bullshit and is a complete diversion. But there are instances, if somebody is shooting up with heroin on site, visibly, in front of a family, that's completely inappropriate. And that apparently was a criticism made of an ISSP monitor by a family, and purportedly the ISSP monitor then threatened that family, and the family actually left town. That's been a real concern. People have been really concerned about that, and I think it's appropriate to bring those kinds of things up. Those don't relate to Karen Gillette; they relate to the other program, the other board. And I've been critical actually of both boards at different times. But the business recently of purging the board, which Karen Gillette is trying to do, I think, is bad. It's not wise to remove all critics from the board. And it certainly shows, I think, an overweening and It's yeah, I mean, it seems like an overweening kind of power grab here. Karen is seeking powers she doesn't need, that she shouldn't have, and the city shouldn't give her. I mean, you know, she doesn't like some of the board members. Well, fine. She's got her own board under her thumb. The new board will essentially, they can't really do much without the say of her board. And it's, there's no problem except that she wants, one has to almost say it, absolute power here. And that, I think, is wrong. I mean, you saw this whole instance, this whole situation in miniature on Thursday night when Scott Kennedy didn't show up at this show, instead kind of went over to the Homeless Community Resource Center movement meeting, and they gave her complete power by acclamation. And again, they're using friendly people in the media like Karen Clark of the Sentinel and Kelly Luker of the Metro to push her agenda and to smear her critics. That's the problem in a nutshell as far as I'm concerned. Any thoughts about that, caller? Are you still there, or have you gone to sleep on it?
Hello?
Hi there.
I would bring up the possibility of tactical inappropriateness. And just to pull another couple of lines from the Sentinel, really, from May 22nd, Gillette never made public the comments from CCH board members that offended her. I think that's significant. And previously it stated here, Gillette determined that comments made privately about her by a few citizens committee for the homeless board members indicated that she would have a problem working for the merge board. Okay, and then further on, it says Gillette never made public the comments, and also neither of these articles mentions any names, right? Keep those people off the merge board. This is from the Sentinel Saturday, May 23rd. The decision came after Gillette resigned, saying that she could not work with some members of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board. She rescinded that resignation Thursday night after her board made it clear they would try to keep those people off the merge board. What interests me is the ambiguousness of the charges, both in what was allegedly said in private, right? Comments made privately about Karen Gillette, and I'm not calling into question Ms. Gillette's leadership with the Homeless Community Resource Center. And that she should be rightfully appointed head of the new organization that's going to be merged. But I think that this tactic is easily questionable as being inappropriate. And the principle that's at stake here, in my opinion, is the ambiguity of the charges and using the public press to raise the issue without pointing out anything specific about the issue other than, comments made privately. That's pretty intense in my reading, in my thinking.
Well, yeah, I think it's also interesting that I don't think any members of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless or the public were invited to her meeting on Thursday night where they had all these choices. In fact, I think when David Silva talked to her, she explicitly told him to stay away because he'd be perceived as an agent of Robert Norris, myself.
Well, I think that hopefully before this thing comes down, which it looks like is going to be Thursday at 4 o'clock at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting, that publicly, after now there have been two articles alleging these private comments, that the private comments are made public and that the people that made the private comments are made public. And if we're going to start blocking things, by the way, as you indicated before, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and these homeless resource centers do get government funds, so by some degree they have a responsibility to be above board. And I understand the ways around the Brown Act. Anticipated litigation is one way to get around the Brown Act, and of course personnel matters. Nonetheless, these kinds of open-ended slams about private comments and those people, right, I don't think it's the correct way to go about things in 1998.
Well, thank you. Caller, shall I? Let me give you the rest of the answer on the air. Or would you rather talk some more?
Go ahead. I'll listen to you off the air.
Okay. I appreciate that caller because I want to give other people a chance to call in at the same time on this issue. I mean, the problem here is the hypersensitivity of a person in a position of extreme power, Karen Gillette. Karen Gillette, as I've said repeatedly on this show, can do no wrong in the eyes of the city council. And it's got to be said, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has made lots of mistakes. But so has Gillette. You know, she's made mistakes too. We all should be entitled to make mistakes. What we should not be entitled to do is suppress other people. And as the caller has pointed out, Gillette doesn't like some of the things that certain board members have said privately in meetings, in private board meetings. Well, that's nice. I'm sure I don't like some of the things Karen Gillette has said. You know, I mean, all of us can't like what the rest of us say all the time. In fact, that's what makes democracy thrive. That's what we have as far as diversity goes. People have different opinions on things. The danger comes when one person has sufficient power to remove all her critics from positions of power. You know, I mean, that's really the point. And the problem is going to be that this may well be a done deal. I'm not sure, but it looks like a done deal to me coming down the pike. But for those of you who want to deal with this, I suggest three different meetings. I suggest showing up at the Social Services Committee meeting at City Council at 8:15 on Tuesday morning. That's day after tomorrow. And that'll be that's the first meeting. Second meeting is show up at 3:30 at the City Council meeting where they're going to be talking about Community House and this issue. Third thing is to show up at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board meeting, 2700 Soquel Avenue, St. Stephen's Lutheran Church, 4 to 6 p.m. on Thursday. We have a caller coming in. Hi, caller.
It's just me again. I just wanted to say that it is extremely important now that allegations have been laid out in the public, and Ms. Gillette is using the public forum to promote her position, that names become public and the allegations become public. That is extremely important. And that is, in my opinion, the crux of the matter.
Sure. I don't know if that's going to happen. I know that the problem is people on the board who are being criticized cannot really respond to Karen Gillette and still retain the confidentiality and privacy of their board meetings. So that puts people, her critics, at a disadvantage. Gillette can say whatever she wants, and that's why it's very useful for her to resign. When she's resigned, of course, she can say whatever she wants.
Nonetheless, when the media mentions allegations and only refers to the people that allegedly made private comments as those people.
Right.
I mean, at some point, those people need to be identified, and these private comments need to be identified, or we are simply being willing to slough everything off to the degree that this appears to be.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
And once again, let me just say this.
Sure.
I don't think anything that I've said interferes with Ms. Gillette's track record as director of the Homeless Community Resource Center or anything else like that. The problem is the tactic here is extremely inappropriate. And for the media to go along with this tactic, some of those people, private comments, I think is horrendous.
Well, you know, Karen is no stranger to inappropriate tactics. I mean, I've mentioned before how in the past there was the infamous porta potty incident in 1991. Interestingly enough, involving both the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and Karen Gillette's what was then called the free meal. We had the Citizens Committee for the Homeless was closing down the tolerated campground area where Community House now sits early. And we had 27 people who said, you have no other legal place for us to be. You're the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Let us stay. And we stayed there. And the Citizens Committee for the Homeless came in, filed trespass charges against us, and arrested three of us, myself and two homeless people, after everyone else left. Karen Gillette had been very uneasy with our protest. She'd been very critical of it. And somebody burned a porta potty. It wasn't anyone in my group that I know of who burned the porta potty while we were being arrested. I was actually in jail. And she became so furious, and irrationally so, I believe, she cut off all people that had anything to do with the protest from the free meal. She blamed us for that. She carted the porta potty directly to the place I was living, the apartment I was renting, and she dumped it in front of the house. She autographed it. It was covered with threats. She left a threatening message on my answering machine. And, you know, I mean, it was way overboard. You know,
well,
it was criminal behavior.
You should have filed a threats report.
I did. I had police officers out talking. You know, I showed them pictures and copies and documents. I brought the matter to city council. Nothing was ever done.
Well, I want to come back to this. And
what I'm saying is that she's considered sacrosanct by the city establishment.
That may well be fine, but it should not play with the public. And it should not play on the front page, the upper front page of the newspaper or record. I'm sorry.
No, I have
When the phraseology is some of those people and comments made privately, and when this goes on for 2 days,
right, well,
comments made privately by some people, this is used as a way to somehow or other justify this move that's being conducted, actually, as we speak right now, because I tend to agree that by Thursday, the tactic is that let's hold up the charade, and it'll be over with.
Well, my view of the whole situation
it's
is
important
is
that
this
that
is
the names of the people be made public, and the so-called private allegations that Ms. Gillette
is using
the
though.
Public media
she
to,
won't do that,
to
Bob.
Promote.
Call her up and tell her. I mean,
it's
I think I agree with you. I think it should be done.
I think it's a very, very important issue. In fact, I've never seen anything like this. Comments made privately. Some people.
Right. Well, you're quoting from a newspaper story, I guess.
That's right. Therefore, if that this is so dramatically one-sided and imbalanced that it doesn't even resemble freedom of speech and dialogue.
Well, as I said,
I mean, what are we preparing for the next century?
Well, I think.
Really?
The
I
real
mean, is
question,
this the kind of tactic that
right.
Santa Cruz is going to tolerate?
Well, I think the real question is what the impact is going to be on the homeless services that's happening here. I mean, I think that the presence of critics on the board are an important functioning part of a positive presentation of services. And I think when Karen Gillette, through using the newspapers and her board, makes it a condition to eliminate all critics through these sort of veiled charges, you know, that they do a disservice to the homeless community. And I also think when she does this grandstanding by resigning and misrepresenting to other people that, I mean, she was already appointed. She had the job, but somehow that she's being treated badly, and therefore now her only response could be to eliminate all her critics. It's, you know, it's overkill. It's wrong. And I agree. I think the newspapers are being used. I've got some guests who have come into the studio, though, that I'd like to continue talking to. Anything more
just
you want to
five
say?
More words.
Okay.
Comments made privately and those people. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. And, yeah, I have to agree with the caller that we're going to see further injustice in the week ahead. We're going to see this board purge because Karen Gillette just doesn't like the board, you know. With a flounce of her hair, she can eliminate people she doesn't like from the board. And that really is a pity, because you give that kind of power to someone, you put the rest of the people she serves in a bad, bad situation, I really think. Hey, that's my view. I'm Bathrobe Spear Robert Norris. You can give me a call and give me your view at 423-5361 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. And then the folks I've been bad-mouthing and complaining about have actually showed up in the studio. That's TRUSC, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. They are here, and they are ready, I hope, to talk. Donna Dice, get over here.
It's not very nice of you, Robert, to criticize us while we're out gathering petition signatures for the homeless initiative.
Yes, I was bad-mouthing Donna, and I'm about to get, I hope, slapped several times across the face here. I would like to publicly apologize. I was expecting you around noon, and I thought that possibly you had forgotten the engagement, but I'm glad to see that you're here.
Well, your other half called us this morning and asked us to go out to the Methodist Church.
Right.
And we got two petition signs.
Excellent. Thank you for showing my apologies for my premature eruption. So.
And how many more signatures do we need now?
You know, that matter I'm not sure of. I think that David Silva, the keeper of the signatures, is the one who lets us know that. Marco, are you prepared to give me a savage tongue lashing, or what do you think?
What happened?
Oh, well.
I'm always ready.
I've been a bad boy. Come on up to the mic here. We need to, everybody has to get.
You've been
the,
a mal niño.
I've been a bad yes, exactly. A mal niño. Well, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz is really a unique organization. I don't know of any other organization in a city that has actually spends the time, based on the very few resources you have, you go down to the court, you check for unlawful detainers, and you send out postcards. Are you copycatting some other organization, or are you the first to do this?
No, in fact, Legal Aid had a meeting with us a couple of weeks ago, and they're very supportive of what we're doing. Uh-huh. The board recommended they have a subcommittee to work with us, and they're happy what we're doing because they feel restricted by the Brown Act, where they're not supposed to solicit people to come to the organization. And since we do outreach and send people to Legal Aid first, if they qualify and can get help from them, that's providing a service for them as well.
Well, what you do, as I understand it, is you actually check the court records for places where the landlord has filed suit to get people out of the premises, and then you inform people of their rights. Is that accurate?
Right, and we have our home phone, which is also our business office, so that we can answer calls on the weekend and in the evenings where it's more convenient for people.
And the first of many repetitions of this phone number, what is that phone number then?
426-0644.
And what I was saying was, I mean, this requires a lot of legwork. You go down to the court, you write down all these cases, you go home, you write up postcards, you go out to the post box, you file all the postcards, you send them out in the mail. Do you know of any other agency that does this in any other city? I mean, Is this a new thing that you've begun, or is this something that's actually been done before?
It hasn't been done before, to my knowledge, and Marco originated the concept because most people don't realize we have access to some public records.
Okay. Here, let me move this mic a little closer. Marco.
Hi.
Hi, Marco.
Hello out there. Don't forget to call us here.
Let's give that phone number again.
426-0644.
And again, that's the phone number for the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz. You can call them anytime. If you want to talk to these two individuals in person, give a call to 423-5361. We've talked about a number of things before the show, Donna, and I really was impressed with the heavy and full kind of a docket and agenda that you have, and the many things that have been happening. Boy, we haven't got much time left in the show. Landlord violence against tenants has been one issue that's come up that I haven't heard much talked about. What's that all about?
Well, a lot of women, either single or with children, tend to be put in a vulnerable position with a landlord who may be an alcoholic or want to have some kind of, shall we say, sexual relationship with the tenant, and they use this successfully against the tenant because of the laws and the judges.
Has this happened recently with any particular landlords or people?
Yes, just this week there was a couple of calls, which we do have regularly, calls of this nature. One lady, her boyfriend and her had been friends since they were 6 years old. He beat her up so badly he's in jail for 3 months, and he gives her 3-day notice. And a lawyer is willing to support him to evict her.
So he sent her a notice from jail to evict her after beating her up?
Yes, and I'm sorry, I meant to say an attorney is willing to take this case.
Is this because she isn't paying her rent, or is she, he's just punishing her?
He's just punishing her. They don't have any oral or written contract.
Any comments on this, Marco?
There was another incident where a landlord beat up on a tenant during the process of an eviction. That was... many cases, yeah. There was one last month I was thinking of, yes. That's landlords really take advantage in many ways, and women are usually the victims.
And mothers, because they're into a nurturing relationship with their children, and they have to deal with these evil landlords and unscrupulous attorneys, which is not within their sphere of daily life.
Then there's the, of course, the classic and traditional gun-toting landlords of Boulder Creek in the mountains.
Oh, and really? The summit, too.
That's violence.
And anything more about these NRA members?
Oh, not recently. No, well, within a month or two, yes.
The summit case.
Yeah, there's the summit case.
What about, should we talk about the summit case?
Oh, no, not really. It's just in another example. I think we have a lot of things to talk about and little time to talk.
Okay, well, not just landlords, not just residents had problems with other landlords, but tenants include small businesses, correct?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
And I understand it. Can you talk about that particular case of a small business that's being harassed by a landlord? You were telling me about it on the phone, but is that public information now?
Yes, there's a Chinese restaurant. They're immigrants, and they only have one person that can translate between Chinese. Luckily, they got our postcard, and we were able to communicate with them through a translator that works with them to urge them to take action, because they only had 5 days to respond. And they, some people just don't always take these things as seriously as they need to, and then they're out on the street.
Can we tell what restaurant that is?
Not, I don't think it'd be proper at this point.
Okay. You also are looking for, you actually gotten some funding from the city council, and of course the question about your...
We never actually did.
Oh, really?
No, haven't gotten that funding. Never got a cent from any organization. Or
is that happening? Or?
The $1,200 was allocated to us as a grant, only in paper, if we were to apply for, and if we still do, apply for a special use permit from the city. We still have that $1,200 there available for us.
Is there some reason not to apply for a special use permit?
Well, it depends on when we rent something, if we have to get a special use permit. But right now, the 261 Water Street is kaput for us. The sheriff had dibs on it from the beginning. We knew that going into it, and we just didn't think he was going to pull up his card at this point.
Well, the sheriff has evicted you from your claim to the...
A little
more potential
like
office
preemptive eviction.
Prejudgment claim to right of possession.
Indeed, all you legal types out there. But you are looking for another grant from, I guess, from the Vanguard organization?
Yes. The Tenants Congress seems to be in good standing with the Vanguard organization, and they might just fund the Tenants Congress and indirectly the Tenants Rights Union.
The Vanguard organization gave a grant to Paul Bowden of the Coalition on Homelessness this year. It's for a sabbatical. He's the guy who's been fighting for rights of homeless people up in San Francisco with Street Sheet and the Coalition on Homelessness fighting the Matrix raids. You've also been having sort of some unusual cases of tenants being harassed, for example, because they want access to the riverfront area, something about vandalism, a fence and a gate. Is that discussable on the air? Or?
Well, at the Riverview Apartments, where Donna lives, they put up a fence, and there was always access to the levee, and they put up a wrought iron fence, and there was a cyclone fence that was always being cut, so there was always access, like an easement, as they say, to the levee. They put up a wrought iron fence, and I requested to the property management 3 or 4 times, as the fence was going up and before it was finished, to put in a swing gate with a master key on both sides, and that could be given to tenants, so tenants only could have access to that gate, and that resolves the security problem. And they never did, and the gate went up, and there were people at the apartment complex who were radical and militant about having their easement, and they tried to open up the wrought iron fence with some other alternate device.
See, sort of like
they were evicted for that. And that's property management's fault, because the owner now loses a month's of rent, and these people are evicted because property management was too stupid or willing to put up that two-way fence.
Now, is there a two-way fence there yet?
No.
Is there a hole in the fence which has been engineered by, shall we say, creative monkey wrenching?
A small one, but it wasn't completed.
For all you folks who want to go down and complete that hole in the fence, no, just kidding. Let me ask you this: what kind of recourse do folks have? Can they go to court on this issue, or are they going to fight this as a retaliatory eviction in some way, or what? Or is it a done deal?
They're gone. From what I understand, they just
we didn't get a chance to talk to them.
We're talking, let me see if I understand the situation. This is, the levee, of course, has become an issue of high profile, actually not as high as I would like, but it's been criminalized after dark, up and down the levee. You can't be on there at night. What kind of access were the folks in your apartment seeking, Don?
Well, it wouldn't have cost, we asked the workmen if it would cost any more to put a gate in while they were putting the fence up. They said it wouldn't cost any more. So I don't know if we had contacted the owner directly, if we could have gotten a better response.
Why do you want access to the levee? I mean, you want to go down there and shoot up crack with all those dirty drug heads? What's going on?
We don't want to have to walk all the way around the block just to get on the river. That's our way to go downtown, and most of the people use that access.
So you're not a criminal gang of drug users?
No, and then the apartments on the other side, it's subsidized housing, and they routinely evict people for stupid things like throwing mud at the fence or, you know, children playing in the
yard. Riding the bicycles
yard,
in the parking lot.
They also are trying to evict someone over there for vandalizing.
That same property management has violated our civil rights, and we're taking them to the ACLU, trying to get the ACLU to make it a project of theirs so that we can go on their property and organize, put up our cards, put up our posters, knock on doors. They're threatening us with prosecution if we go there right now at this moment.
Indeed, I've heard similarly with the folks trying to circulate the petition to repeal the sleeping ban in an apartment not far from the studio, actually. There was a similar problem. Thereabouts, yeah, although I certainly wouldn't want to reveal the secret location of the studio to the FCC, who already knows. In any case, yeah, so what are the chances that the ACLU, which is renowned for doing nothing locally year after year on basic homeless rights issues, helping your right to organize it at an apartment?
Okay, right now, Diane took it to her legal committee meeting, which they had last week. And I haven't heard back from her yet. I imagine I'll get back to her after the holiday.
Well, that sounds like potential good news. I understand that the sleeping ban initiative is also being considered by the same ACLU's legal committee.
Right, and Ed Fry is, I talked to Ed Fry about it, and he said sounds like a good test case. And I talked to another lawyer, Paul Sanford, and he says he'd be willing to jump in on the fray next, when he comes back in the middle of June.
You can send these attorneys our way when you're finished.
Oh, yeah. We'll be working together on this.
Now, another concern I heard from you, Donna, I guess it was yesterday, was that the local judges seem to be ignoring the law around habitability when the questions have come up. So, for instance, if a person's being evicted and they claim, hey, this is not a habitable apartment, the judges, even judges like judges that are supposed to be liberal, are turning into Republican landlord agents.
I don't think any of the judges are supposed to be liberal. I think they're supposed to be conservative and uphold the status quo. And they're very threatened by any organization that tries to come in and say, hey, you're entitled to read the law books and file papers and fight back. That's a very radical concept for a lot of people.
How has this manifested itself, their hostility or their apprehension by the judges?
Well, we've had some really good cases prepared that we think definitely should have won, and they've gone down the tubes. I don't believe it's through any fault of our own, but simply because the judges are making local rulings considering what they think habitability should be in Santa Cruz.
Are you talking about judges like the Right Honorable Sam Stevens and possibly our famous judge... McAdams, and these are judges that are well known for their liberal reputations.
Well, according to inside source at Legal Aid, they're all registered Republicans.
Well, that's your frightening realities here. Arbor Cove housing, is that something we can talk about here or not?
It's a senior complex. And evidently the people there are very afraid of being evicted because they're older and they're disabled and there's no other place for them to move to. And people are taking off their shoes to walk up the steps because they're afraid they're going to wake somebody up and somebody's going to complain and they're going to be the next one to go sleep in their car at 60-some years old.
So that has happened? A number of seniors have been evicted and are now sleeping in their vehicles?
No, there's one lady I know. She had been there since the beginning. She'd been through a rough divorce, and she asserted her rights. She was the president of the complex, and here it's supposed to be a cooperative. Well, the new manager that came in was not cooperative. She wanted to dominate, and she effectively got rid of Gwen. Now Gwen has to pay a lot more rent.
What kind of recourse do folks in that complex have? Can they organize against this?
Yeah, if they get the guts together to do so.
And you had some things you wanted to say, Marco. I'm sure I've forgotten a number of issues, although we're on the edge of the end of the program.
Well, we're in a campaign in the drive right now to go before the Board of Supervisors, the City Council, and Capitola. We put in requests for $70,000 in grant money from them, and we really could use an office, which this grant money would provide us, a lawyer on retainer, and a full-time activist working with us, and that's what we're asking for. So any activists out there, pro-activists, who want to help us with this next two-week push to lobby different organizations, get letters of support, phone calls of support to the Board of Supervisors. We need Jan Buttes as the swing vote for us. We have the City Council, and in Capitola, we need this one swing vote also. So if you please get in touch with us at 426-0644 and help us in the next 2-3 weeks do this budget thing so we can possibly get $70,000 for the Tenants' Rights Union.
That's 426-0644. You're talking to Marco and Donna of the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz Trust. You can also, of course, let them know if you're having problems with your own landlord, if you're a landlord who wants to break ranks and help out, if you want to help them with their own daily work, 426-0644. Donna, any closing comments yourself? We got a clipping.
I was in the Sunday Chronicle today, and an article about Jesse Jackson and a talk with Professor Jane Malden, who gave some stark statistics on poverty in her speech, and I'm quoting, "While the poorest one-fifth of Americans make $4 more per month than they did in 1980, the top one-fifth make $2,300 more, and the top 5% make $6,200 more. The poverty remains persistent despite startling economic growth should challenge us all," she said.
Definitely. And I had hoped to read about Proposition, what is it, E, the new landlord sellout thing happening in San Francisco, mm-hmm. which I haven't had time to do. Is there anything you want to say about that as I cue up our goodbye music?
Well, all power to the San Francisco Tenants Union in defeating that.
Dig it. And I second that as I seek.
It's de-control of rent for apartments under 12 units. Which is approximately 50,000 units.
So 50,000 units, or people in 50,000 units, are going to be bounced out on their ear if this Proposition E passes, if landlords want to raise the rents and the folks can't afford them.
Yes.
In a word. I want to thank you both for coming in today and apologize for my hasty apprehension and paranoia. I will recommend a suitable punishment off-air for that.
I want that T-shirt, the old Stop SWAT and the Police State T-shirt.
Old T-shirt. I'll have to find that one for you. You were around in the 70s.
I made that T-shirt.
You made that T-shirt?
Yes, I was in the group that made that T-shirt.
Take note.
I made the T-shirt, too.
Take note, SWAT teams. He's here. He's got to be stopped.
The first originator of not myself, but part of the movement for the first police review commission in Santa Cruz. Back in 1978, we had it on the ballot.
Community Against Legalized Militarism.
Right, I'm an old commie from way back, C-A-L-M.
So there you are. Confessions here on the air. Well, listen, thank you for being with us today. I'm going to whip into our theme song music and invite you to come back to Bathroom Stairs Broadsides on Thursday at 6. For those who are interested in the Scott Kennedy debate, Kennedy has approached me and offered to come on the air again. Frankly, I'm not too eager to have him cancel for a fourth time and keep people running around, but we'll see if something could be worked out. Who knows? It's a possibility. Do come to City Council meeting tomorrow, I should say Tuesday, following the Citizens Committee for the Homeless brouhaha, the community house stuff. That's happening at 8:15 in the morning at the mayor's office on Tuesday morning. You can also come to City Council at 3:30 and in the evening at 7 on the same day, Tuesday. And the Citizens Committee for the Homeless board meeting is on Thursday at 2700 Soquel Avenue, St. Stephen's Lutheran Church, 4 to 6, open to the public. If you've gotten any of these times, give me a call, 423-HUFF. I will answer it for you. Thanks, and thank you. Hey, it's Reckless and Tom Reveille. Wow, what a show must be coming down the pike. Stay with us. Back again, moonshot.
Thank you, Robert Morris. What a great show. Just took that out real quick. This is Reckless. Special guest today, Tom Revelry. Old time revolutionary kind of thing going on. We're going to talk about some stuff. First, before I start my show, I'd like to... we have a problem here at Freak Radio. We have no idea what our listenership is. We have no idea how many people are listening to us at any given time. I'd like to invite everyone that is tuned in, that has access to a phone, to go ahead and call in. I'd like to get at least 20 callers. We're not going to put you on the air. You don't have to say anything. We just want to get an idea of how many people are out there tuned in at any given time. So I'm going to open us up with a song, give you a chance to dial in, 423-5361. We have an interview with Asada Shakur coming up, some poetry, some Crash Worship, Dead Can Dance, some other kind of music, and talk. So please give us a call if you're tuned in at all and you have access to a phone, 423-5361.
What you believe, and the blindness you can see. injustice as they spit back.